The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
The main story that probably would have dominated the front pages is the collapse of the European Super League. I said on Monday, with very limited confidence, that it was never going to happen. At least I thought it was going to maybe run for a while and then fall apart. But it lasted. If you're to measure things in failure, Anthony Scaramucci was 10 days in the White House under Donald Trump. It lasted 20% of a Scaramucci, which isn't very long at all. Ger Gilroy, host of OTB AM, is with me, as is Declan Jordan, who is a senior lecturer in economics. We'll get to Declan in a minute. But Ger, it fell apart pretty quickly at the end, didn't it?
It turned out to be a house of cards. That was I mean, I kind of really would like to see what would have happened if it could have lasted a little bit longer, just to see how far the brinkmanship would have gone. But once the first parts of it started to come apart, once the doubts started to leak out, you could see that it hadn't been planned properly, it hadn't been executed properly, there was no overarching structure in place, and it was all very flimsy. That was the problem. Like, you're doing all the President's Men a little bit later on. There's going to be some proper Woodward and Bernstein going on at the moment, and a big, long 800-page book will be written about how this nearly... Well, it didn't nearly happen. How this came about in the first place and how it fell apart so quickly. And I think that's the most surprising thing, is that it did fall apart so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it was highly entertaining to watch last night. Again, far more dramatic than anything you were going to see on the pitch. First of all, we had Chelsea saying that they were writing the letter to say, lads, we're out. Then City came out. Then Ed Woodward announced his resignation. But they waited until 5 to 11, which I think was a real two fingers to the print media in the UK, to announce that all six English teams had left, because that meant that deadlines were under pressure.
I think that, the print, obviously, media, things have superseded that to the point where they all have their online outlets who were capable of covering that straight away, and the rolling news was happening. I was watching the game last night and I was disappointed when I flicked on Sky Sports, that they weren't actually just having rolling coverage of it. They were doing the games as usual.
They were actually just pretending like it was a normal night of soccer.
And it was the lower tier of English football was far less interesting than what was actually happening in the tectonic plates that were shifting beneath the feet of the super clubs. Just to put a little bit of context on this, though, like, this wasn't just a plan that they'd put together in the back of a fag packet over the last couple of days. The idea of a European Super League has been in gestation for decades. So why they couldn't have had a better, more orchestrated public relations campaign is going to be the one defining question that they're going to have to at some point in the future go, we actually could have done this. Because if you think about what actually happened this week, was that UEFA have agreed to a new structure for the Champions League, which will come in 2024, which is a horrible competition now. It's like a one season long competition where there's no knockout stages until the very end, and it's like 20 odd games, 10 home and 10 away, and it's going to be this massive bloated Thursday nights. Football moving to the Champions League's moving to Thursday nights, according to the plan this week. So it's not a million miles away. There is also going to be some guarantee that clubs who don't qualify through their domestic league will be grandfathered in on the basis that they were already a super club, and so therefore, because of tradition, they need to be in the competition. Not a million miles away from what the new European Super League is going to be. So if they'd waited a while, put a PR campaign in place, put it out there and said, look, this new thing that UEFA is trying to force down your throats isn't very good. What would you think about maybe if the football that we played midweek was always good against other big teams? There's a million different ways that they could have sold this, and an awful lot of hypocrisy has been spewed from various sources this week. So,
were they trying to be clever, Ger? This was so cloak and dagger that they knew that they were that the FA in Britain and UEFA and FIFA, that nobody was going to have any truck with this. So they had to keep it so tight that they couldn't talk about it out loud. And as a result, then, it seemed ham-fisted. They thought it was grand, but it looked very poorly thought through.
How do you get support for something if you don't explain what it is? Like, it seemed when it went public on Sunday night into Monday that they didn't actually have the support of the 12 clubs they claimed to have the support of. And they certainly didn't have the PR machines of those clubs, and they didn't have the managers of those clubs, and they didn't have the captains of those clubs on board to the point where they were coming out and saying, actually, you know what? This could be very exciting. This is a big opportunity for us. Instead, what they had was the shriveled identity of the executives, who no one likes. No one likes football executives in any of those clubs. In like John W. Henry had like some form of cachet, but even then, there was loads of stuff that Liverpool have done over the years. They furloughed their staff and they had to recant that. There were loads of issues that they've had at various stages over the last couple of years too. His popularity was about the most popular of all of the ones. And he, funny enough, he's the only one who's actually come out and issued an apology this morning on video. Arsenal have put a statement out, but John W. Henry has at least stared down the camera and said, okay, I'm really sorry. I, you know, maybe should have thought this through a little bit. But I don't know. It is the very definition of an omni shambles, and it's amazing that they didn't have somebody whose job it was to think, how are we going to win the people over who are going to be the people buying the TV subscriptions that is going to make this work? Because if you're the TV company who's supposed to be in the background here, you're looking at all the fans going, oh, we're not going to buy this, going, well, what? Hang on a second. Why am I giving these tens of billions over a very short period of time to play in this league if all the fans have suddenly become disaffected? Fairly simple economics, I would have said.
Yeah, one would argue. Let's listen to John Henry. He's the only one to actually, as you say, face the camera and talk about this. He's kind of going, yeah, I misjudged how angry you'd be, which means that he's probably quite distant from the fans in the first place. Let's listen.
I want to apologise to all the fan supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours. Goes without saying, but should be said, that the project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans. No one ever thought differently in England. Over these 48 hours, you were very clear that it would not stand. We heard you. I heard you. More than a decade ago, when we signed up for the challenges associated with football, we dreamed of what you dreamed of, and we've worked hard to improve your club. Our work isn't done, and I hope you'll understand that even when we make mistakes, we're trying to work in your club's best interests. In this endeavor, I've let you down. Again, I'm sorry, and I alone am responsible for the unnecessary negativity brought forward over the past couple of days. It's something I won't forget and shows the power the fans have today and will rightly continue to have. If there's one thing this horrible pandemic has clearly shown, it's how crucial fans are to our sport and to every sport.
Sure, you and I have been around long enough to know that somebody actually taking personal responsibility for something that went wrong is quite rare. So we have to salute him for that. But again, does that give us an insight into how small this was before they went public? That this was effectively a group of very wealthy individuals who own soccer clubs, came together effectively on their own, came up with a half-baked plan that fell apart.
So I don't think the plan was half-baked. I actually think that they had They had done a lot of work. The FT produced some details yesterday on how the contracts were going to work and tax equalisation and sharing of profits. And essentially, they've taken the model from the NFL. Most people probably don't pay that much attention to the NFL in America. But what happens is every shirt that gets sold, if you buy a Tom Brady Tampa Bay Buccaneers shirt, the revenue from that gets shared equally among 31 of the 32 teams. Dallas Cowboys sit outside that arrangement because they're so big and wouldn't do it. But essentially everything gets shared apart from the revenue that you generate from the match day experience in the stadium itself. TV gets shared, everything gets shared. And the plan was that this was going to happen with these clubs. And they were going to bring other clubs in as well. So they had all of that stuff. They'd thought through all of the stuff that you think would be the most difficult for big companies who are essentially rivals to come together and work together and create a new cartel. That bit was not half-baked. The bit that was half-baked was how do you get the fans on board? How do you communicate to the public what it is that you're actually trying to achieve with this and how it's not that different from the current scenario? And the current scenario just has those guys at UEFA who, if you were in one of the clubs, you would have been saying, look what they do. Look at the waste that they've had. Look at the fact that this organisation has had the history that they've had. Michel Platini used to work for these guys, for God's sake. And that's the one this organisation, this group of arrogant clubs couldn't even convince everybody that UEFA were the bad guys for the first time.
Yeah, well, that is rather damning. Joel Glazer's video has yet to go up. I just checked it there on the Manchester United Twitter page. I doubt we're going to get any contrition from him now, I suspect.
Look, the one thing here is that this football has not been saved by the last 24 hours. So there's a lot of like glee that the Super League is dead, but almost nothing has changed. Like, nothing has changed except UEFA have now, under the cover of this, got through what the new Champions League is going to be, which is a completely broken system compared to what we have. We've just watched some of the best football that we've ever seen in terms of competition. The game between Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich, even though Bayern Munich were missing a load of their best players, was some of the best competitive football at a technical level, at an excitement level that you're literally ever going to see. In human history, it was almost as good as the football that you've ever seen. And what's going to happen now over the next couple of years is that those matches will be further and further apart, and we'll see them less and less because far more teams are going to be in, they're going to play far more games. So this isn't a massive victory for football this week.
I mean, the one thing they were saying was that the quality of some football has gone down. One would make an argument the more teams they're in there, that the more duff games, nil-all draws you're going to see, that'll have the fans slightly less impressed. Declan Jordan, I bring you in at this point. I've spoken to you before, Declan. You're involved in the Centre for Sports Economics and Law at University College Cork. You would have predicted this, I would imagine, because this was the direction that the sport was going in. It was, as Ger has pointed out, the cack-handed nature of it that was surprising rather than the intent.
Hi, Jonathan. Hi, Ger. I think the idea of the Super League is a natural progression with football. That is the football industry over the last number of years. I mean, it's becoming increasingly globalized. It's becoming increasingly a television consumed product. Markets that matter are markets in Asia, in America. I wasn't surprised. One wouldn't be surprised observing the football industry that this is where it was going. I think if anything, it wasn't going to be a European Super League. It was going to be a global Super League. I agree with Jerry. I mean, what has stopped this going ahead has been the cack-handed nature, the incompetence in actually setting it up. I think you're looking at owners really here who are, I suppose, kind of in a bubble. I mean, you know, the reference there to the NFL is a good one. And there are lots of things in the NFL that are quite good for sport. You know, they have a very strong commitment to competitive balance, for example. You know, in football, European football, you relegate the weakest team. In NFL, there's no relegation, but you actually give the weakest team the pick of the best player coming out of college, right? So it's all about trying to get this competitive balance to even up competition, because they know that having one dominant team is not good for the sport. And I think trying to graft that onto to football in Europe was always going to be a very, very difficult thing to do. But you had these owners who kind of are removed from fans. We spend a bit of time, I think, picking over the bones of this, and there will be quite a few papers, academic papers coming out of it and books. But I think one thing that I would be wary of is painting this as a fan victory. I'm not sure this is really a fan victory. I know fans lobbied and politicians reacted to that lobbying and protested, and politicians reacted to that. I think really this was UEFA worried about its model, the Premier League worried about its model, and for once UEFA and the Premier League played tough. You know, normally they know they need a big club, so they give them what they want.
But they threatened them with the boot, and that probably focused minds. I want to just read out a text message that's after coming in from Sean in East Donegal. Good morning, Sean. Thanks for texting News Talk. Last Monday, the BBC showed a documentary about the resurgence of Derry City FC in the 1980s, when it joined the League of Ireland. Such passion for that club in the city of Derry and in Inishowen and parts of East Donegal. Such a contrast to that soulless European Super League. Declan, we read a quote that you'd written for the Irish Times yesterday. We see the Irish fans up in arms, and the discussion, like, I mean, I went for a walk last night. It dominated the walk pretty much for the hour that I was out. Everybody has been talking about this. are we not the commodity here as well in Ireland? That we are far removed from the fans that were protesting, for example, the Chelsea fans protesting ahead of the match yesterday evening, the people who are on the ground who go to matches week in, week out. Are we not as commodified in this country for the big clubs as the man sitting in downtown Beijing who doesn't know where Manchester is but loves Manchester United?
Yes, we are. Now, I mean, the history is different, of course. You know, you think back to how people, supporters picked their clubs when they were small, how there would have been Irish players playing at these clubs before, and you would follow those Irish players and so on. So there is a closer connection, even just through geographic proximity, cultural proximity, than the Asian market. But a lot of that is you know, this sepia idea in the past, right? I mean, you know, what these clubs are looking at now are global TV markets, right? It's become a TV platform, right, to be consumed. And what they care about are you know, selling TV rights into Asia, into America, selling merchandise into Asia, into America. The Irish market is very small for them. And to be honest, you know, a lot of Irish-based Premier League fans will travel over, you know, a few times a year perhaps, care deeply about their clubs, about the teams that they follow in England. But, you know, those seats will be sold to others. I mean, I don't think there's any particular, you know, graw among the English clubs towards the Irish fan base. I mean, I think they'll be far more interested in where the bigger market is. Now, I think I've seen on, and I've had reaction to myself on Twitter, where there are, you know, there seems to be some kind of a purity test among League of Ireland fans. Like myself, I consider myself, I follow Man United, but I support Treaty United, right? So I watch the matches during the week, but when they're back, I'll go to the League of Ireland games with Cork City and Treaty United. But there isn't a purity test among League of Ireland fans, right? This isn't about, you know, fans who follow Premier League clubs are all barstoolers or don't care about football. You can do both, right? You can watch football on TV and enjoy a game like PSG Bayern, and you know, this is fantastic. And then at the weekend, get this real authentic experience where you can go and the players can actually hear you cheering them and you know, supporting them on. And you know, you meet people and you can discuss the match and you react to things immediately. I think a lot of Irish fans now will start thinking about this. I mean, the scales have fallen a little bit. I don't know why it took this for them to realise that clubs only care about money. You know, they haven't really been paying attention over the last while. But they may want a more authentic experience. And I think this is an opportunity for Irish football, for League of Ireland, to, you know, not to browbeat Premier League fans into, now weren't you wrong and now you learn your lesson. You know, to say, look, yeah, great, you know, you're watching on TV, keep watching, right? But, you know, come down and get into a community club at the weekend.
And experience an actual game in real life as opposed to on telly. And one texter into News Talk makes that point. This could and should be, they say, a huge chance for League of Ireland clubs to sell themselves as the genuine article with potential for deep connection. They should be able to win over new people to the idea that it is worth checking out the local club. Ger Gilroy, long term, are we going to see some further upheaval at the upper echelons? Not in terms of the managers and the players that we obsess about week in, week out, but the likes of the Henrys, the Glazers, the Abramoviches. Are we going to see some now getting the hump that they didn't get their way and maybe looking to get out?
I don't think so. I think, look, with John W. Henry, I don't know. With Liverpool specifically, I don't know. It's possible that he decides whatever hassle is coming isn't worth the while. However, the immediate reaction to the fact that he's the first one out to apologise, that's important to Liverpool fans because, you know, they can get behind that. And already you're starting to see a little bit of that. So a lot of this will die down very quickly. That's the first thing. I think it's very interesting that potential for fan movement. And maybe this is a wake-up call to the fans that actually giving incessant loyalty to a corporation is wrong and that somehow something needs to happen. I see people saying that they think that the politicians will now legislate on the back of this. I don't believe that for a second. No, I think that this was a big story.
This is about winning over voters by saying the right thing at the right time.
Big story this week. I get to go out and say whatever I want about it. And you saw all of the politicians around Europe saying this is a huge matter, very important. We need to get on top of this. But they're not talking about homelessness, and they're not talking about any of the other crises that are happen to be enveloping us at the moment, because it's an opportunity for them to talk about sport.
They could do something about, you see.
Absolutely easy for them to sort out. So, will anything change? I don't know. Is that wake-up call going to last longer than any of the other previous wake-up calls that anybody has ever had in their lives? We all know something big happens to you, or a big experience happens to you. You live with it for a week, and then after that, you go back into the old ways that you have been. I do think it's an opportunity for League of Ireland clubs to market collectively and say, if you love football, come and experience it, smell it, touch it, feel it. We're right beside you. You can access it. And it is a genuine, proper nationwide league with really strong local teams the whole way across the Western Seaboard and in Dublin. And it is a big opportunity for them as well. Mm. Whether or not this has any change, Roman Abramovich bought Chelsea for very specific reasons. Likewise, the Arab states in the Gulf bought those clubs for very specific reasons. Stan Kroenke owns Arsenal because he believes he's going to make a load of money out of it. He's got a huge stadium in London, which he'll be able to fill again and again. So this was the money shot for them. This was going to absolutely increase the value of their clubs, potentially from 1 billion to 4 billion or from 2 billion to 6 billion. That hasn't happened yet, but I don't think this has gone away. This is the first skirmish. They failed. They'll regroup. They'll come back in 5-6 years' time and go, actually, you know what? We've got a better plan. We're going to put out our ambassadors at the start and say, is this Champions League actually working properly for the World Football Pyramid? We're not sure. Perhaps there's another way. I really wanted to see what would happen if the lawyers had got involved. Because at that point, you begin to see what the possibilities are and the parameters are. And then you test whether or not the politicians will actually back up their words with legislation.
Someone think of the poor lawyers. They didn't even get a chance to get to the courtroom. It fell apart so quickly, which is tragic on every level for them.
I don't think that bit's finished. I think the lawyers are going to have their day. Don't worry.
Oh, this is going to play out. This isn't the end of the war. This is just the end of the first battle. Ger Gilroy, host of OTB AM, Dr. Declan Jordan of University College Cork. Thank you, gentlemen.